It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Google's control over what people hear, watch, read and say is unprecedented. Almost 90% of internet searches in the United States use Google. Google's domination of the search engine market is so complete that to Google is now a commonplace verb. With that market power, Google can and often does control our discourse. And sometimes tech companies talk about their products and the effects of those products as though they're forces outside of big tech's control. As we've heard time and time again, big tech's favorite defense is, it wasn't me, the algorithm did it. But Google's search engine isn't some supernatural force. It's a computer program written and maintained by people. So every time we search on Google, we see only the web pages that Google decides we should see, in the order that Google decides we should see them. Type a few letters into the search bar, and Google will tell you what you should be looking for.
All right, that was Senator Ted Cruz, and he was talking about what we're going to be talking about today, and that's tech censorship. It's not the first time we've discussed it, but let me just say that during this time of lockdown and coronavirus, we have watched the social media platforms now accelerate their control of our speech and our freedoms, and they're doing it worldwide. We're going to be talking about Google. And YouTube, you know, Google owns YouTube, by the way, and Facebook. Facebook has just appointed a board of governors that the list of 20 is horrendous. It's horrendous. And so they will be censoring your speech on Facebook. And so that's the topic of our discussion. Now, by the way, Google owns YouTube. And speaking just of YouTube, you will be well aware that in the last few weeks, they have issued a dictum that they will not allow anything on their platform that does not conform to whatever the World Health Organization, that corrupt organization that has been the shill for Red China, they will not allow anything on their platform that does not embrace or endorse or repeat the talking points or the viewpoint of the World Health Organization. Just that for starters. And what did that result in? Well, we know the movie Plandemic, or the film, the documentary Plandemic, was taken down. Those two doctors from Southern California who did a press conference just at their table talking about how they what they thought was really the truth about the death numbers, about social distancing, all of it. That was removed. Two doctors who own a series of emergency care rooms in California censored from YouTube. But the censorship is not just taking place here. It's taking place overseas as well. And it made me think of my friend, who's, this is not on her resume, but I do consider her a friend, Katie Hopkins, is a personality in English media. She was on the third series of The Apprentice back in 2007. She was a writer for The Sun, The Daily Mail. She's had her own television chat show in Great Britain. She's very controversial. And something that she did recently now has been snatched from YouTube, and it was called Life Under Lockdown in the UK, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Okay, so under what reason, for what reason did they give you that they would take that video off from YouTube?
Yeah, and this was a short 15-minute video, and it was entitled The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly from Great Britain, Life Under Lockdown. And it was, if anything, just a kind of amusing summary of where we're at, the things that have been good in terms of there being fewer people around, the bad, the ugly. It was probably one of the least offensive things I've ever done, if I'm controversial in any way for people that don't agree with me. But YouTube said it violated their policies and removed it. It wasn't even being put out by myself. It was being put out by another conservative organization. So, you know, it had gone through someone else's radar to check it was appropriate for our audience, and it was perfectly fine, but they removed it. And just as you and I started this conversation, YouTube has just removed the video, an interview with Professor Carol Sikora, who has 50 years in medicine and is the founding dean and professor of medicine at a leading university here in the UK. I'm just about to get it so that I can push it for people. His video has just been removed from YouTube as well because his narrative on corona is different. It's just a little bit more positive, a bit more upbeat, and a little bit more reasonable. And so they've removed his video. So to your point, YouTube are just removing everything from anyone, whether you're a professor or just a columnist like me. If it doesn't follow the narrative, it's gone. And you won't even know it's gone, of course, because you'll just be directed to something you're supposed to be reading.
Yeah, they'll post something, you know, what we see dangerous content or, you know, This is misinformation or disinformation, which gives me the chills. It reminds me of the Soviet years. It just reminds me of the Soviet propaganda and the crackdown, disinformation. Yeah. You're not allowed to think that. You need to be re-educated. And so That is really what we're facing. So, Katie, go ahead.
Yeah, I think exactly that. And I also think, you know, that when you go, so what? Okay, so they removed the video. So what? Okay, people can't see it. So what? Well, it says that people can't hear what they're not allowed to hear. Okay, so what? So what assumes people are so stupid they can't and are not allowed to work out for themselves whether they agree or disagree? So if we think of anybody that's been removed, whether it's the professor, David Icke, myself, it doesn't matter if you watched it and thought, gosh, that woman is a raving lunatic and should be singing at the sky. That's okay if you think that because you're a smart individual, you've worked that out. But to take away this idea that people are not intelligent enough to work out their own opinion, that's where the darkness comes. And I think the so what beyond all that is this new legislation. I think America is resisting this very well. But if you think about new legislation that was just passed in New Zealand, in under 48 hours, under the guise of corona, Jacinda Ardern brought in legislation that now says in New Zealand you can enter someone's home without a warrant. You can lock down groups of people if the Prime Minister decides that should be the case. You can close a business on the order of the Prime Minister without giving notice or without giving reason. That law came in under the guise of corona, passed in 48 hours, and that's never happened before in the history of New Zealand that someone could enter your home without a warrant. So that's why this censorship feels like something that's part of something much bigger as a power grab on our freedom.
No doubt about that, Katie. And man, we are, I think America is, there are a lot of people that are fighting, and we'll see what the outcome is here. We've got some forces pushing back, but I want to know, also what's happening in Great Britain, and we've talked about this so many times, you and I have to say my son is in Scotland and I have a vested interest, but I've always loved, I've always felt a kindred spirit because we're cousins, I guess. But Katie, the last time we spoke, you were really in distress. You'd gone to some garden center and weren't even allowed to buy seeds, or you were arrested or something to that effect.
Yeah.
So what's changed? What is it? You paint a picture for us of what's happening now.
So now in the UK, so similar idea, we're still officially in lockdown, but if you can't work from home, if you can't function in your job, then you are told you maybe can go back to work. So we're in a strange situation where we are under lockdown, but if you work in manufacturing or construction, you're supposed to try to go to work. You're not supposed to be within 2 meters of anybody else. You're not allowed to be on the beaches. It's still a very controlled environment. People are still policing each other. People will shout at you in the street if they perceive that you're too close to them. We're still queuing like idiots to get into the supermarket, for example. And there is a really uncomfortable tension in Britain right now between people who would like to get on with their lives, get back to normal, and have really started to realize this isn't as bad as we were sold. And then this really militant left-wing you know, you will recognize in America, all of those who are anti-Brexiteers, anti-Boris, anti-conservatives, they're using this as hard as they can. So our schools probably now will not reopen because the unions have really pushed hard on their agenda. They've created almost an invisible picket line around the schools so that teachers are too scared of the unions to go back to work. It looks like our children will be up to 6 months off school now. And so there's a real feeling that if you go out or do anything, you're a traitor to the public services and you're a traitor to Britain. And it's a very nasty thing, still having people policed on the beaches. So that's going on in terms of what we are and aren't allowed to do. And one of the kind of one of the places I went to visit yesterday, unbelievably, despite the fact that our emergency hospitals were never used, the 4,000-bed Nightingale Hospital in London only ever had 50 patients in it and was mothballed without really ever seeing itself function. Just near me, I went to visit a Nightingale Hospital still being built as we speak for a disease, a virus that was never that bad, and for patients that don't exist, because our politicians are now desperate for us to believe lockdown was the right approach when many of us know it was absolutely not necessary. And of course, our economy is now in free fall, 20% unemployment looking likely.
Wow. You know, you're mirroring what you're saying is really what's happening here too. Different details, but same. I mean, we have such a division, such anger. You know, all the mask wearers are just furious all the time. It's just it's at least now we can see kind of identify each other. But you know, our differences are manifested in people. You know, the mask reminds me, Katie, very much of just you know, when we want to control a dog, we put a muzzle on it. And if we want to control a horse, we put on a bridle. And for me, the mask, I recognize this is a stark statement. I understand that some people need to wear them. And certainly if people that are sick, I would wear one. I mean, I would be very tender and careful about that. But in general, as a healthy person walking around in the fresh air, to put on a mask feels like being muzzled like a dog to me. It feels like being subjected, and it seems like a symbol of subjection to me. But I'm guessing most people in Britain are wearing them. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And actually, you're so right. You know, for a period there in my youth, my misspent youth, I worked as a security guard at Disneyland Paris. So I just went in, got my uniform in the morning, used to patrol the park, pick up lost children, that sort of thing. And weirdly enough, this phase of life, what you're seeing, what I'm seeing, reminds me of that. Because when you put on a uniform, somehow you automatically, you perceive as a person of power. Someone will come and ask you questions. They'll ask you for help. And I'm reminded of that feeling of putting on that security guard uniform when I see people with their masks on and these ridiculous blue gloves that they wear for no reason, touching their own face and nose and eyes, you know, with the gloves on, makes no earthly difference. It's as if they perceive they have put on a uniform of power and they are now the supervisor of you. They are the ones who are in control. They are the ones towing the party line and you are the dissenter. And I get that feeling when you go walking about in the street with a mask on. They have that feeling of superiority and they feel, I took my children to the beach the day before yesterday. We were asked, where do you come from? By people who were locals there. They obviously thought we were from the outside. We were an hour's drive away. Where do you come from? I mean, that's going back to Germany when people were asked to show their papers to cross the wall. I mean, this is the sort of weirdness that manifests itself. And what's so upsetting, I think, that many of your listeners will understand, is there are people who I thought, you know, were pretty good, solid friends of mine, people who I, you know, would have asked advice for maybe in the past. Some of them are on the dark side, wearing these gloves and masks.
Yes, we're
and
having
that's
the
been
same.
One of the starting things.
Yes, to me too. We've seen the same thing here. It's really exposing a lot of things about each of us, you know, maybe good on bad on both sides. But Katie, I think one of the most distressing is the censorship of speech and free thought. And I think the mask represents that as a visual of that. And when we come back, Katie, always such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Facebook and the new board that they have elected. We're going to talk about Google and their censorship, Twitter. It's just extensive. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And I have to say that these days, I'm not merely worried about my ability to do that and my fellow patriots to be able to do that. I'm terrified. I've witnessed friends and allies stripped of their platforms and their reputations and their voices. Some can no longer communicate on social media. When I planted my little flag in the social media world on the internet almost 20 years ago, I never thought that I'd have to wake up one day and wonder if my entire website was going to be unplugged because of an opinion that I expressed. And yet, there are many of my friends and allies, your compatriots, who not only can no longer communicate on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, or Instagram, but who also can no longer gather peacefully at hotel conferences to discuss their ideas. Still others are now forbidden from doing business with their banks, their payment processors, online retailers, and even ride-sharing services. There is no more safe space that we can feel that we are guaranteed the right to communicate our ideas with each other, not in restaurants, not at homes. And you've seen over the last couple of years since Donald Trump took office that there are many elected officials in Washington, D.C., who can no longer walk on the streets without a threat or risk of violence to themselves or their families.
All right, that was the voice of Michelle Malkin. Michelle was at giving a speech, and that was just a portion of her speech. She posted that on Twitter. And President Trump retweeted the post, and he basically said, the radical left is in total command and control of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Google. The administration is working to remedy this legal situation. Stay tuned and send names and events. Thank you, Michelle. And guess what happened? YouTube took down the video. YouTube, owned by Google, took down Michelle Malkin's video and the president's tweet. So here, this is where we are. The state of affairs where big tech has become actually larger and in many ways more powerful than our own government. This is Sandy Rios back with you, and I've asked someone to join me this morning who really, honestly, I think Dan Gaynor knows as much about all of this as anyone that I know. Dan is the Vice President of Business and Culture at Media Research Center, and they have been really on the front lines of pushing back through their Free Speech Coalition, which American Family Association is part of. And so Dan has joined us this morning. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, and yeah, this is the issue, and you know, you can have free speech, but if you have free speech and nobody is allowed to hear it, then how much free speech do you really have?
You know, it reminds me of the old Soviet Union, Dan, where they used to say, you know, you could have views, but you couldn't say them. You couldn't share them with your children. Oh, sure, you could believe in God, but don't speak about it. And it really is kind of reducing itself to that. We are not able to verbalize for fear of harm or employment or being shut out of culture. You know, what do they call it? Canceled?
Yeah.
Canceled?
This is cancel culture, where you say something. I mean, it happens to all sorts of people across all spectrums. Dave Chappelle, who's a hilarious comic, he certainly is edgy. But he's made some comments in a recent video a few months back now that transgender community didn't like, and they tried to cancel Dave Chappelle. I mean, he's a very famous, very popular African American comedian, and they're trying to wreck his career. There's a mix of government involvement, not just our government, but foreign government involvement. Controlled by the social media companies, and then the online culture has shifted dramatically. I've been online for more than 25 years. I was director of new media for a media company back in the mid 90s. I was one of the really cutting edge people at that time, and I can tell you that culture then was a free speech culture, left or right. It didn't segment. And now, over time, the left has decided that there's only one type of approved speech, theirs. If you say anything that goes against that, you're a hater. And, there's a lot of concern about hate speech, which, you fast forward that to current events, and Facebook just launched this new oversight board, which is an appeals board for content. And their first, their official op-ed of the co-chairs mentioned the term hate three different times in the op-ed that ran in the New York Times.
Yes, I want to talk about, we have to talk about that Facebook panel, and we will do that. But I think the general topic, which you've introduced is, you know, I'm thinking back, Dan, how did we get here? And my mind goes, of course, to public schools. I really think that this has generated, you know, from the bottom up, teaching our kids gradually over the course of years that you know, it started with LGBT rights. It started with the gay movement, you know, not being able to say anything against anyone or anything bad about or alluding that it wasn't okay to be gay. That's when the term hate speech was coined. And it seems like it has blossomed out of that to everything. Is that the way you see it?
I think that's a pretty fair characterization. What's happened, you know, really, I narrow it down. I've been using this description recently. Everything in our society now comes down to two words and how you view those words, which one you consider more important. It defines everything about you. On the right, the word is liberty. And that means you want to be free. You recognize you have government and some controls, but you want to be free. That's your most important thing. Freedom comes with risk. It was founding fathers embraced that. They, you know, all of our ancestors came to this country, knew they were taking risks doing so. And on the left, it's safety. And you can never be safe enough. And so the online culture started as a culture of liberty, a culture of online freedom. You could say anything you want. You could do anything you want. If you remember, you know, there was a lot of problems of, you know, people get pornography spam in their emails and stuff. And nobody really freaked out about it. You know, as much as they opposed it and Congress passed laws, you know, to restrict it. But I mean, basically, people understood that online world was like the Wild West. Well, now the Wild West has been settled. It's been settled, and the people who are marshals and mayors and stuff of all the online communities are all liberal, and they believe more in safety. So there, and safety not by the American rules, but safety by, and here's the new terms they're using, international human rights rules. So that means if you are, one of the new Facebook board members or somebody in Google or Facebook or whatever, you really care more about international rules. So what we now have gone from is the founding of the online world was pretty much founded on American First Amendment rights. Yeah, that was the belief. Not that you had a right to be on these platforms, but that the people who founded the platforms believed that more speech was better speech.
Right.
Now, there are three sort of regimens of freedom for the online world. There's the Chinese version, which is complete government control, where they monitor everything you do, use it against you, use it to control your entire life. Then there's the European model, which is sort of a step toward that direction, where it's government control. They don't like what you say. They don't think you should be able to say anything that's controversial. And, you know, they shut you down if you do. It's heading toward China. And then there's the American version. And the American version used to be one on liberty, and now the American version is shifting toward either the European model or eventually the Chinese model. And I think if we're not careful, all roads lead to the Chinese model.
Oh, I think so too, Dan. And, you know, we should say, I'll say we, I have met, before the Free Speech Coalition, there were lots of people who met, not a small group, but not like three or four people, there's probably 15, who met with Google at least twice with their upper echelon. And I remember in those meetings confronting them or just challenging them to implement our First Amendment in their international codes. What have they got to lose? I mean, what have they got to lose? Why are they trying to please these other countries? In fact, I should ask you that. Why do you think, is it their own ideology? What is it? Is it an economic consideration? Why would they want to, Google was American-based at the time, still is, why would they want to appeal to a platform that is so limiting? What's in it for them?
Well, remember, America's got 330 million people. The rest of the world is 7.2 billion. And in the rest of the world, the concept of free speech as we view it, even in sane nations, nations that we consider to be long-held allies, Australia, New Zealand, the UK, they don't have anywhere near the level of free speech and free press that we do. So, and then these companies tend to have a large international employee, percentage. They don't embrace. I mean, it's not just free speech or free press. I mean, they up and down the line, they don't embrace American the Bill of Rights. You know, conceptually, the concept of guns is anathema to these to many of these employees and to these companies. Yep. The concept of freedom of religion. Freedom of religion, it scares them and it scares people in many countries because you look again, much of the world does not have the American sort of pluralist, religious model where you can, you can have next door neighbors who are, down the line, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, and Hindu all in one street. And everybody's supposed to get along. In much of the world, that's not the case. So what's happening instead of what you could loosely, since we're talking about science, what you could loosely describe as sort of the Star Trek future, where everybody embraces the same level of culture and the same level of freedom. No, what's happening is instead of America exporting our level of freedom, we're embracing foreign lack of freedom.
There's no question about that. No question about that. In fact, we could just say, for instance, to talk about Google just for a second before we get to Facebook, which I really want to talk about. Google has been, Google owns YouTube, and we just talked to Katie Hopkins. They just removed a video that she simply talked about what's going on in Britain now, how it's affecting the economy, how it's affecting the people, and no, but that must be taken down. The Plandemic video, I talked about that, the one on COVID-19 with Dr. Judy Mikovits. I don't know if she's completely accurate about everything, but I want to hear her. But that video's gone. It's the two doctors that did that press conference in their like boardroom and talked about what they were finding in California, that was removed. So it is getting really serious, Dan. In fact, do you think that this COVID-19 pandemic has sort of accelerated the control of speech?
Oh, massively. Because, I mean, what's happened is we've gone from a situation where companies could say, well, hey, look, we're sorry you don't like the pro-life speech on our social media platform. And they might restrict it. Certainly, that we've had a lot of problems with Facebook and Twitter about that. But there's not the energy behind it, desperation. Oh, my, we must restrict that. People's lives are in jeopardy. But for COVID-19, there is a firm belief among the left and the media that there is a right and wrong answer for everything. And, unfortunately, that's just not the case. Their doctors disagree. The World Health Organization has, has released some information and it changes what it does or what it, what it argues, because this is a, we're learning about the virus. And as we learn, things that experts might have said before now change. So what they're supposed, the whole definition of scientific inquiry, though, is you're supposed to be able to raise questions and say, is this right or is this wrong? And, they don't want that now. So the World Health Organization, which at one point in time back in January was telling you that there's no evidence of, at the time, person-to-person transmission, well, obviously they learned there is. So, you can quote the World Health Organization from then, and you're wrong. You quote it from later, and then you're right. The World Health Organization waited until March 11th to declare this a pandemic. Does that mean beforehand they were an organization we shouldn't trust? And so that's the problem. When you determine that there's a scientific fact, I mean, the history of this is really bad. Governments or religious groups declaring what scientific fact is. Oh, the world is flat. Earth is the center of the universe. Well, oops, we were wrong. Except with COVID-19, because the immediacy of the threat and all that, it's forced these companies There's a lot of social pressure. There's a lot of media pressure. And there's a lot of political pressure for them to clamp down on speech.
You know, I should also add, Dan, just as a specific, the CEO of YouTube, Susan Wojcicki, actually said that they would be taking down anything that violates the World Health Organization guidelines on the pandemic, which is what they have been doing, which is just shocking because we now know that the World Health Organization has been a shill for China. And that brings us to a whole other issue about the connections to China. My guest is Dan Gaynor. He's the Vice President of Business and Culture at Media Research Center. Dan, when we return, we must turn now to Facebook, because I think even more people use Facebook than the other, my impression is. And Facebook has made a change that is just very frightening. And we need to explain that to people, because this will affect almost all of them. So let's do that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Well, if you go onto Google and you type in anything that's election related, and that could be hundreds of things, you type in immigration, or you type in the wall, or you think of all the things that are related to elections. The point is, you end up with some search suggestions that are flashed at you as you're typing. We now know that those search suggestions have a very, very powerful effect on people, and that they alone can shift opinions and votes dramatically. And then search results appear below. And the point is, if there's a bias in them, which means if a search result that's high up on the list, if that takes you to a web page that makes one candidate look better than another, well, if you're undecided and you're trying to make up your mind, what we've learned is that information posted high in Google search results will shift opinions among undecided people dramatically, because people trust Google, and they especially trust high-ranking search results. That's why 50% of all clicks go to the top two items. Again, I can't say what Google did, but I can tell you what we found. We found a very dramatic pro-Hillary Clinton bias on Google, but not the other search engines, and in all 10 search positions on the first page of search results. That's quite dramatic.
All right, that was Dr. Robert Epstein. He spoke up just a few years ago, started speaking up about Google and their control over what we hear. He's talking about specifically, he was talking about the 2016 election. He also said that he feels, according to his analysis, that millions of people voted for Hillary Clinton because of the way they were guided through the Google search engine. And so that's just a little taste of the power that Google has over our elections. But we have another situation. Dan Gaynor is my yes, he's the Vice President of Business and Culture at Media Research Center. Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg made a very bold pronouncement not long ago, and we were all very happy about it, because he basically said that the Facebook must continue to stand for free expression. And I have to tell you that the Media Research Center leading the Free Speech Coalition had a lot to do with that bit of boldness. And we met with Facebook executives on more than one occasion and thought that we were developing a pretty good relationship, but that they were listening. But Dan, what since then has been transpiring?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Zuckerberg continues to talk about free expression, but he would like some guidance. He warns about China, so he warns about the worst version of free speech, but he clearly doesn't want to be in the deciding content business. So what he's trying to do is, get rid of it and give it to other people. So he embraced a whole bunch of fact checkers, most of which are liberal, and now just recently announced this new oversight board. And they spent 18 months to 2 years creating an oversight board for content appeals, sort of a Supreme Court. And here's the problem. The oversight board is overwhelmingly not just liberal, but radically liberal. And when I say radically liberal, we're talking about there's a fair degree of whack jobbery among the liberals. And so the board currently is 20 people, and they're going to name another 20 people. But the first 20, five of them are from the U.S., so you've got two who are sort of conservative, one social con, one libertarian, which unfortunately will mean they'll cancel out on cultural issues. Then two liberals, including Pamela Carman, who was the one who made the Barron Trump joke during the impeachment hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So liberal and more liberal, not likely to cancel each other out. And then there are 15 international board members, and the 15 are a parade of liberals. You've got somebody who works for George Soros' Open Society initiatives in Africa, somebody who works for the George Soros-funded and founded Central European University in Europe, two other people who work for or have affiliations with George Soros-funded entities, and even the executive director used to work for Article 19, which was another George Soros-funded entity. So there's that problem. Then there's one of the members of the board, is so radical, she's basically a radical Islamist who is pro-Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood is considered a terrorist organization in several countries, and Donald Trump considered naming it such in the U.S. last year, but has not done so. They're affiliated with Hamas, which we do consider to be a terrorist organization. Then you go down the line, at least six of the people are the international group are very publicly anti-Trump. Nobody publicly pro-Trump, but Alan Rusbridger, who used to be editor of The Guardian, wanted the press to censor Trump's press conferences, which, by the way, they seem to be generally doing now. He's supposed to be a free speech advocate. And you just sort of work your way down and going, they say lots of crazy things. And you realize there's only one of two possibilities. Either Facebook didn't vet these people, which is scary, or Facebook did, which is scarier. That they came up with a board that is overwhelmingly liberal, overwhelmingly national. Yes, some of these people have some credential toward free expression in their countries. Even the Pakistani woman, Nijat Dadd, who said she would never come to the U.S. when Trump was president. She's advocated for free expression, but they're advocating for the international view of free expression. And here is the problem. The problem is the board, 75% of the board is international, and the way they're going to decide content is they only commit that one person of each of U.S. will be on a panel deciding U.S. content. So that means all the rest of the people on the panel are going to come from international community who don't have any grounding in American ideals, American free speech ideal, American free press ideal, American freedom religion ideals. And so they're going to be the ones deciding our content. So we came out with a report, the Free Speech Alliance came out with a report last week, did a wonderful Zoom call that a lot of press people and some conservative organizations were part of. And my boss sort of released two recommendations for Facebook. Three recommendations. I'm not sure they'll go for the third. The third is the most obvious. They need to, I think he said, set this on fire and get rid of it. Basically give up on the oversight board. But if they don't give up on it, then what they need to do is two things. And that is fill the remaining 20 slots. You better fill most of those with conservatives. And by that, to balance out the 18 liberals from the first, I guess you got to have 18 conservatives and two liberals in the second batch. I know they won't do that, but that's what that's what you'd have to do. And then the other thing that they should do is only allow Americans to rule on American content. And that's a hugely important thing. And that's because Americans, and it used to be even American liberals, but Americans come from the system where we have the Bill of Rights. We have a belief that more speech is better speech. I grew up reading liberal libertarian Nat Hentoff, who was always, he wrote a syndicated column. He would always talk about how look at these right wingers who want to censor stuff. But then he would say, follow up and write a column about these left wingers who want to censor stuff. And, he was an advocate for free speech, and that's what the only way that the conservative movement can survive now is to embrace that attitude. And Facebook is not embracing it.
I love these three. I love those three suggestions. And, help me remember, Dan, wasn't Facebook that invited K. Cole James, the president of Heritage Foundation, to be part of a board and then rescinded that invitation?
No, that was Google.
What happened was she
invited to be part of a board, and Google's employees, who are overwhelmingly liberal, remember, they freaked out after the election. Google's employees rebelled against that, and so Google canceled the board entirely. Here's K. Cole James, got fantastic career behind her, and she's not even good enough to be part. We can't even have one conservative on a board about artificial intelligence for Facebook. So that's where things stand.
Well, I guess my point was going to be that there was precedent for canceling. I guess Google, if they would consider that precedent. But I'm with you. This is just frightening. It really is. So as you project, if Facebook does not listen to these suggestions, what does this mean for the average Facebook reader or user, Dan?
What it means is initially the board is going to only rule on content that has been taken down. Then over time, they're going to rule on content that stayed up that shouldn't. But I think very obviously it means sooner or later, the board's going to get into one of those controversial decisions like hate speech, where they're going to rule what is hate speech. Already, the term is part of the Facebook policies, just as part of some of the other social media platforms' policies. And it is a term that is abused by the left. They feel, remember, Facebook is the place where you can determine your own gender. You can say, you're a dragonkin, or something, and, someone who thinks that they're not human. You're allowed to do that. That's fine. But we don't have to accept their reality. They could force us to, and that's the danger. The idea of international human rights rules, that's what they keep, talking about. It's not American rule. And, I have tried to warn people in the tech community that if they go down this path, they're going to lose all support on the right in America. And I mean all support. The conservative organizations that continue to back them, if they go this route, will have no supporters. I know there are some conservative organizations that, for their own beliefs, want to believe that these companies should be able to do whatever they want. But if these companies give up on the American concept of freedom, I think the American users are going to really be furious. And so they'll end up being popular in the international world, but Americans will find other platforms. And I think Americans will end up changing the law.
Dan, in the immediate present or future, the next few months, we are in the middle of a presidential campaign, even though it doesn't seem like it, but we are. And there will be an election in November. Facebook, of course, had pledged that they would not take down political ads. That's what I thought Mark Zuckerberg said, and yet I'm not going to stop and play it. But there's a gentleman in Wisconsin who has run for Senate in the past, and he sort of is challenging Governor Evers about the shutdown and all the scientific research. And Facebook took that off, took it down. So are you still convinced that Mark Zuckerberg's declaration that they will not take down political ads or they'll allow the free flow of ideas in that arena? Do you trust that's going to happen?
Well, what's happened is, and this is one of the areas where I'm a little bit sympathetic to Facebook, and that's because of the pandemic. What Facebook has had to resort to is a massive amount of artificial intelligence to take down content. And one of the things that they've agreed to do, and this is their policy, and I think they're wrong, but they have agreed to do it, and that is to take down content that is in violation of the law. As I told Facebook, I said, this puts you on the side of authoritarian dictators throughout history. This puts you on the side of Bull Connor, beating down African-American protesters. It puts you on the side of Putin if people protest in Russia and the government says it's against the law. But that is how they're trying to navigate the pandemic and saying, so if a state, you know, if a state is saying it's in a lockdown mode and you want to do something advocating against that, you're going to get taken down. I think that's probably what's at issue here. And like I said, it's, and humans aren't involved in that day to day. It's all being done by artificial intelligence.
There are some remedies, and I've been encouraged by some of them. One of them is that the Justice Department has been saying, the president said in that tweet that, well, he didn't spell it out, but it looks like they're looking at antitrust suits. Also, we have governors who are bringing a lawsuit, several governors, and we have individuals like Dennis Prager who are suing Google. So there are things in the pipeline. Are you optimistic about our chances of pulling this back, Dan?
No, I mean, let's put it this way. There's a line from a song I'm very fond of quoting from the 1990s. All is not lost, not yet. We're still engaged in these companies. We're still fighting. But, you know, we're fighting a large battle, and part of it's an international battle. These companies are being pressured by foreign governments to restrict speech, restrict freedom, and people want...
I have to interrupt you. I have to interrupt you, but MRC, Media Research Center, has been on the front lines, and we are so grateful. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.